Welcome to Talk Wealth to Me, a safe space podcast where we chat about anything and everything related to personal finance.
The information contained in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It does not constitute as accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Talk Wealth to Me. Today, we sit down with someone who is at the epicenter of a very interesting topic, and that is the legalization of cannabis. And Kevin Shin and his company, Grove Group Management, is at the epicenter of cannabis and the financial stakes of different companies that are using cannabis for different wellness products, among other things. This is an incredibly interesting episode, and we can't wait to have Kevin back. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Shin.
So I think this is going to be a fun topic for us. I think before we start, Kevin, could you just kind of introduce to our audience Grove Group, and could you kind of break it down for us too in layman's terms what exactly it is you guys do related to the cannabis industry, what that means to be a cannabis investment fund?
Sure, Katie. The cannabis investment fund. We started back basically in 2018. We launched off a cannabis investment fund. And basically what we are is we're a venture capital / private equity fund because we allow for some debt. And we're looking for innovative products, gaps in the market. We're constantly checking for inefficiencies in developing solutions and trying to find ways that we can make money in the market. And then when we did our initial research, we found that there were good margins to be made. This is actually a very good fun concept. We can return a decent amount of money after the initial investment and the buildup that it takes. And I like it because it's brick and mortar. You know, we're producing usually goods or some type of technological service. There's a lot of disruptive technology. There's a lot of disorganization, and then in finding disorganization in the market, there's a lot of opportunities for profit. So a lot of key things where you find a new industry, there's ability to find and exploit opportunities to fix inefficiencies. And then we went about it as a minority corporation. We're trying to help minority corporations as well. That's about being smart and pressing our advantage while also helping minorities, right?
Yeah. And I want to talk to you about that more because for years there's been in the news reports that specifically African Americans and Latinos were more so negatively impacted by the prohibition of cannabis laws throughout not only the United States, but around the world. And is that why, I guess, the diversity component is so important to you guys? Is it trying to correct some of those maybe wrongs?
I think correcting some of these wrongs. It's about the prison system and justice. It's about us being people who care about the economy in the United States, right? Just the amount of tax dollars that go to keeping people in prison that were wrongly convicted on the three strikes rule, mm-hmm. right? You're talking a large portion of our tax dollars are going to keep people that have minor infractions that eventually they end up being criminals because they get put into the system. So, it's something that's near and dear to our heart, but then it also has economic purposes, supporting minority corporations and helping people do and make smart business choices and pressing in our roll-up strategy and giving them our expertise to help them run a business gives advantages in the market. You know, if you're a minority corporation that's selling, let's say, soap, and then that soap is made by a minority corporation, then there's grants available to you in most states because you're a minority corporation producing this product. And then on top of that, when you get to distribution, there's an advantage because certain stores have to buy a certain percentage from minority corporations. So then it goes hand in hand. We're helping minorities take advantage of what's available here in America, using the laws and making sure that everything to their advantage is there and also make sure that best practices are being established.
So let me just kind of follow up on that too. So when you're talking about the economic impact of some of these policies and making sure that there are some, I guess, investors who are helping minority groups, you're also talking not just racial minorities, but you're also talking about gender. You're talking about women as well, right?
Yeah, women are underrepresented in the market. We try to establish that we invest in women corporations. We have corporations that have women in their C-suite and on their staff. And it's essential to us to make sure that we're helping to right some of these wrongs, right?
Yeah.
It's essential for us to know that we're taking advantage and that we are using the system that's in place, at least in the United States, to our advantage economically as well. Right. So we're not doing this surely 100% because, you know, we're great people.
Sure.
We're doing this also because there's an economic advantage to it.
You're smart right? people.
Yeah. I mean, the cannabis industry has for a long time kind of been jokingly referred to as like the next green rush, kind of playing off the gold rush. So I do want to ask you, is that economic opportunity and the ability to, I guess, bring some minority entrepreneurs with you, is that what attracted you and your partners specifically to work in the cannabis industry versus any other industry where money's always needed, right? You always are needing investors.
Are not just in one specific group, and we're not going to discriminate, right? If, mm-hmm. you know, there's a white corporation that has a very good product and we think it's disruptive. You know, survival of the fittest, we're going to look to acquire that asset. But then we're also have a mandate to look for minority corporations and getting the correct investments that can help our portfolio. So then you have to look at the whole market in its entirety. Do I think that some of the legal aspects will change in the future? As we find that the money requirements for marijuana is so expensive, you know, if you're running any specific business, the cheapest business is still a couple million dollars to at least start up. And that's not even maintaining and running and seeing that you actually hit critical mass in terms of what your production capability is, where your sales capabilities are and distribution possibilities are. So, like, it's not a cheap game to play. And then the ability to take in investors, our investor limit, basically minimum, is $500,000. So we're not taking money from people that don't have the money to afford to invest. We're taking money from people who can afford to invest, who does have connections, who can help. And they participate. They participate to help our investments grow bigger and better. So that's why we're more of a roll-up strategy. We love it.
Well, and let's talk about the financial aspect, too, a little bit more. Given that cannabis is not legal on a federal level, there's a lot of federal red tape around using banks or even, I guess, applying for a loan. Sometimes it's very hard for a cannabis business to even get that seed money to start. So what kind of problems or what kind of experiences, I guess, have you had because of those limitations on where you can store your money, save your money, access your money?
I have lots of stories that over the course of the years, I think really early in the time where banks were a lot less available, I was down in a state, I'm not even going to name the state, and the person had multiple dispensaries, and I went to a warehouse, and the warehouse is basically the storage for the cash for that they earned off of sales. And it was absolutely a scene out of something like Scarface.
Sounds about right.
I was thrown aback because, you know, they had some cats and dogs there. I'm like, you know, what's the cats and dogs for? It's like, yeah, we had problems with rats. It was eating the money.
Oh, my God.
They couldn't deposit the money.
That's like
goodness.
Out of Bad Boys 2.
Yeah, absolutely. So then, like, it went from there. You know, it's still not necessarily welcome. I'll say that it's getting a little bit easier as time goes on, but you know, there's difficulties around every bend. these days, even for something that's readily legal, like CBD, getting a merchant account so you can process credit card processing, you know, it became relatively hard. You know, there were a lot of services that were mainstream that just kicked people off, even though it was a federally legal item. So what, while I'll say it's a lot more open, and then there are banks that are going to process it, you know, you just have to be smart in finding those banks and then working with them and hopefully, you know, growing out. The debt aspect of the industry is still very tight. There's a lot of work to be done in that sector. We're working to help solve that and establishing debt protocols and the ability to put debt facilities into the market smartly and cleverly. That's one of the things that I think that we're doing that's different. We want to make sure that the whole suite of the financial world is available to cannabis. And then, you know, just because we're in such nascent years, we have the ability to develop so many different things. And it's a lot of fun.
So you use the word cannabis. Is that including the what we're seeing as far as CBD goes and the different products that are coming out with the hemp plant versus cannabis? And I know that they're very closely related. Do you differ?
Cannabis, no, when I say cannabis, I do mean hemp and also marijuana.
Okay.
Generally, I'm just using cannabis as the typical Latin term or genus. So hemp and marijuana, you know, both are great tools. The implications of what they can do have not been completely solved yet. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun to find out what we can get out of it.
It is interesting. From your aspect, there must be a ton of work that goes into looking at all these different companies and these different products that come out and research. Because, I mean, you see CBD in 7-Elevens now and in little corner markets to buy the pills, and yet you can go online and find these incredible websites from everywhere from Colorado to California where you know that it's legal. How do you differentiate and go through all of the different products that you have available to you?
It is absolutely impossible, right? The number of choices out there is extremely big. And finding something without a known brand name that you know and trust already is relatively hard. I think that's the benefit of having some celebrities involved, like us working with Tiki Barber. We're actually launching a line of CBD pet products called Our Pet Paws, and also Placate on Walmart and Amazon as well. And then, you know, having that celebrity person, you know that we're putting money into the factories. There's news articles that support it, right? In general, I am looking for those news articles from the corporations that show that a decent amount of money has been invested into the lab, so you're not getting hoodwinked, right? You have to do more research than normal, and then a lot of the times you're not going to find much. And because of that, it actually breeds mistrust for me. Because you look at all these different markets and avenues for selling, you know, the stuff that you might find at 7-Eleven or a gas station could literally be hemp seed oil, which is the same thing you can buy at maybe a Costco to cook with, right? And spiked with maybe a vitamin or something like that. And they say, hey, no, CBD. Because of the regulations and the testing of saying, like, oh, this is what must be in it in order to sell it, then these claims could be absolutely unfounded. I've read at least a couple of articles where they tested things like bath bombs and other things where no CBD was present at all. So the amount of hype that cannabis gets drives sales, but then it's almost in a bad way because there's going to be a lot of bad actors. And then the bad actors gives the whole market a bad name.
Well, I wanted to ask. You know, I wanted to ask you about the bad actors because there was a vape scare not that long ago. It's still kind of ongoing. Here in California, where we have recreational and medicinal legalization, vape pens are available. Not even that far from where we're recording this podcast, and a huge push came out in the local news. You need to buy your vape pen from a licensed dispensary because the products, even the fake ones, look so similar to the real ones. It's very hard to tell. Do you think that the lack of education, not only for consumers, but just around cannabis in general, has had a negative effect on people's ability to invest in the product or for the industry to just kind of expand at a faster pace? Or what kind of impact do you think that these bad actors are having for, I guess, investors like yourself to bring new products to the market?
Investors like myself, because we establish more SOPs and then we establish ways with our marketing team to make sure that the customer knows that they're getting quality, right? We have to put it on ourselves to regulate ourselves a lot of the times, just because the amount of oversight given can vary from state to state. And, you know, places like California, right, there have some great brands over there. And the problem is, as soon as you buy a product, then the person who can counterfeit it and scan it with the today's technology is relatively easy to pull a knockoff now, right?
Yeah.
You just put it in a box that looks similar, printing it up, and, you know, going to a local printer, you know, getting the sticker and then putting the sticker on, and it looks very similar. And then, you know, the black market's going to take advantage of that and make fakes.
What kind of response are you hearing from lawmakers regarding legalization?
Lawmakers, some of them understand of it, some of them don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've walked on both sides. I've talked to both because I just like to know what each side's saying and the reason behind their thoughts and actions. It seems like the people that are for it, they understand the health benefits. They've read the research. They understand that it's basically a more healthy alternative to alcohol. But they also understand, on the other side, the people who don't like it, they're scared that it's a gateway drug, that the addiction levels, which is actually lower than alcohol, is basically going to give them a gateway into hardcore drugs, right?
Sure.
The research is out. And, you know, I think also on the naysayer side, there's a lot of people who are worried about their neighborhoods, law enforcement, you know, having a hard time of coming up with that universal test to say, hey, you know, you're driving under the influence. And that's a real problem because, you know, if people drink and drive, there's a standard test, and you say, hey, you know, you're going to jail if you do this. If you smoke and drive, you're still under the influence. You're still more dangerous. You know, it's just like if you're texting and driving, and then people should be aware of that. And then that enforcement problem all of a sudden becomes a lot more difficult for law enforcement. So then there are things that have to be solved. This is some of the inefficiencies that we like to look at and say, hey, you know, what's the answer? What's the solution?
Does an absence of, though, a universal federal legalization law, is that where some of the challenges lie, though, in terms of enforcement or policing? Because, I mean, here on my way home, I saw a billboard yesterday that said, this is your sign, don't drive high. It was in green letters, and it was very clear, like, don't toke and drive, don't smoke and drive. So here we get that message right along with the don't text and drive billboards and the don't drink and drive billboards. But that is not necessarily happening throughout the
US. Amount of CBD and cannabis billboards we have in San Diego alone is astonishing.
Yes.
It's everywhere.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of marketing.
It's something that, you know, where the lawmakers who are against it, you know, this gives them a little bit of ammunition. Right. Like everyone has to be responsible. And then being responsible means, you know, don't try to kill somebody with a weapon. A car or a truck is a weapon, right? SUV is basically stronger than a gun because it weighs more and then you can hit people with more force. Right.
Yeah.
So like people have to understand that, appreciate it. And then not only that, respect the law enforcement, you know, you know, the laws have to become stricter for driving under the influence. We have to find a universal test. Now, we've been looking for a couple of different kits and seeing if you know, distribution of these kits in the townships we're in and the communities that we're in, and distributing it there and seeing if that would help. You know, it's all things that we have in the works, in the plans, and trying to find a solution.
So do you foresee the U.S. legalizing cannabis federally at some point? And if you do see that happening, what kind of impact do you think that U.S. legalization would have on the cannabis industry worldwide? Especially since we would not be the first country to legalize cannabis.
We wouldn't be the first. Hopefully we'd do it better than some of the other countries.
Be the largest.
We're the largest. We would be able to, look, federal legalization of cannabis is coming to America. We have basically 2/3 of the state that has some form of marijuana laws available for the public and the ability to consume, right? If we're looking at that fact alone, it's just a matter of time before the rest of the states come along and we say, all right, it's federally legal. You know, being able to have an overriding regulatory board and hopefully with the best picked laws from each state that has worked and seems to have worked, and enforcement and what the problems that has happened and ways to not overkill it and not overtax the industry so it gets, I guess, melted down to, you know, is it worth to buy your weed from a local dealer, you know, or is the taxes just, you know, way too overbearing? Now, there has to be the correct balance, and that's going to be tough to find. But then if you have everyone working on it, finding a solution, even after we pass it, you still know that the legislation is going to take probably years to actually fix and be able to actually enforce.
Yeah, and then somewhere here, like in California, where it was legalized, then each individual city, it seems like, has passed ordinances for or against. I mean, that just adds a whole another layer of difficulty when it comes to trying to do business. It seems like, you know, you drive a few blocks and something is legal, and then you drive a few more blocks and it's not. So is it the local communities also making it more difficult, or do you feel that if it did become legalized nationwide, more of the smaller communities would just kind of follow suit?
Regardless of where you go in America, we're Campbell's soup, right? Campbell's vegetable soup. You know, we have like a little bit of carrot there, a little bit of celery there, you know, a little bit of tomato here. Each little section of America is going to have their own little beliefs and I guess own little distinction of saying like, oh yeah, you know, I'm orange, you know, I'm green, et cetera, et cetera. So we're always going to hit little problems like that, and I don't think we necessarily stop things like that. But, you know, having the federal government saying, like, hey, you know, this is legal, we'll change at least the aspects of how much they can limit what they can do.
So I guess given all these different rules and laws throughout the land, is there a type of investment that's still exciting in this industry at this point? Because it seems like...
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many, like I said, there's so many inefficiencies in this market, right? There's a lot of gaps. There's a lot of things that still has to be solved. What, even the distribution lines and how things are going to run out. And I can't even declare winners in specific brands and in sophisticated markets, right?
Sure.
If you take California, for example, I can't tell you that the number one vape company is going to be there 5 years from now. I can't tell you, you know, who's the best edible corporation, because I think that change will come.
Okay, so you're predicting major disruptions in this industry. Like, just because you're on top today does not mean you're still going to even be around 5 years from now?
compare the market from here to 5 years from now, we're going to be looking at a completely different beast, right? We're seeing basically people that have overly valued their corporation, raised money, and are now getting sued because the investors found out that they're not going to get their money back, right? That's happening a lot more frequently now. You know, I've always told the general public and our investors that, look, we're not going to pay the cannabis tax. We're not going to say because we get a dispensary, we're going to ignore the basic principles of economics. You know, we're still going to look at what our sales numbers could be, what the population is, what the demographic is, how much we think we can get per sale, and how many customers we can attract within that given region based on our competition. After checking out the competition with a clicker in front and finding how many people walk inside, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're gathering as much data points as we can to make smart decisions and saying, hey, look, we think we can make this much money at this location, and if we do these different actions, we can make more money then. Go into it in a detail where I'd like to probably make it akin to maybe like a hotel or like a boutique hotel for dispensaries. Manufacturing, you know, we go into it with, all right, who can we distribute with? You know, the fact that we develop products, we can, you know, sell them on Walmart.com and get them up on Amazon and, you know, get distribution through these major channels where a lot of people are selling through, you know, websites, you know, their own personal websites and having problems with payment portals, right? There's a difference in terms of developing the plan before you invest. And then we're rating these businesses, and we're not going to give them a benefit of cannabis with the exception of the margins that are generally pretty good.
So it's no different than any other business, really, at this point then. I mean, you're looking at the value of the business plan, profit and margins, no differently than any other venture capitalist would do.
That's a different business. Look at what MedMen did, right? MedMen made a splash in the market because they basically did the marketing play. It's like, look, we're in Hollywood when they're really not, or not Hollywood, in, what's it called? Beverly Hills, when they were in a town next to Beverly Hills, right? You know, they're making splashes in splashy real estate areas where the real estate is probably more expensive, that the economies of scales didn't make sense. And they're paying for it. The first thing they got rid of was the real estate, which was an absolute terror of a mistake in terms of decisions. Because, you know, that's the basis foundation that they can get loans off of, etc. And they totally gave that up. And where are they now? They're trying to pay off vendors with stocks and dilute their existing members. You know, that's like punishing the people who made you what you are.
If people
are just looking to make a splash and, you know, steal some money from some people, and you know, and there are people that, like, I've seen a shop give me a proposal before they ever opened and said that they're valued at $30 million. They haven't made one sale from a dispensary, and I said, all right, if it's $30 million, that means you're going to be producing, you know, $30 million net X, and you can pay us back in this amount of time. No way in hell would that be possible based on the location, based on the area. And it's not like it was the only friggin' dispensary in Las Vegas or something like that. It was like one of many. And, you know, the person just wasn't rooted in reality. They did the cannabis tax. And then, you know what? The person also raised money because of it. I think by the time we got to that specific project, they already raised about $4 or $5 million.
Oh, wow.
Without making a sale? That sounds like a bad episode of Shark Tank.
So
that's the problem, though, because people hear cannabis, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, everyone thinks like Tony Montana, you know, Scarface, lots of money everywhere. And then that's how it goes. No, it's a business. You have to run it like a business. You know, you have to have the discipline of it. But then, you know, there's going to be some great products out there that are needed in the market, right? There's this existing solutions that you just have to modify and develop it for cannabis, and then there are great opportunities.
Well, and I want to talk to you about those opportunities too, because it seems like we briefly mentioned this before, but the cannabis industry has the potential to disrupt other industries. We briefly mentioned the criminal justice aspect, which is that there were so many people that were imprisoned for possessing this plant. But with legalization, that's going to change. Healthcare, there's a lot of people who are benefiting medicinally from using the plant, both with the THC form and then just the pure CBD. And then there's hemp, which can, there's a lot of stuff you can make with hemp. You can make food, you can make rope. I've heard before that the
you can make glue, you can make a lot of stuff.
I've heard that the first Model T ever was made from like a hemp material. Because it's like almost as strong as steel or something, but I mean, even
steel.
Yeah, even beyond that, weddings. You're starting to see more weddings incorporate bud tenders and offering cannabis to smoke instead of alcohol. Bachelorette parties. There's tours. There's a restaurant in LA where you can go have something to eat and then something to smoke or vape. What do you think that this industry is going to do? Like, do you really see it flipping all these other industries and kind of disrupting them? Or do you think it's a little bit dramatic to think that cannabis is this powerful?
I think it's dramatic at all. What I think, you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. The fact that cannabis is out there and the things that you mentioned that it can do, it is a textile, right? It's also, I guess, like an alcohol replacement. It's also a drug, right? The pharmaceutical aspects of it, the cosmetics and the lines that you can develop that can help people, even pets, right? If you look at the pet testimonials that we have for our pet line, you know, our pet paws, the difference in coats and the difference of the pets and how they walk, and you see the difference as they are constantly treating with CBD. Then as they get treated with CBD, you see shinier coats. You see, you know, testimonials that have dogs with skin diseases disappear, and then dogs who have a hard time moving around a little bit easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love the implications that this has, not only because it's environmental friendly. I think that's a great point to pull out. You know, we can plant this in the ground. It's one of the fastest growing plants on the planet.
It's a weed, right?
It's basically a weed. It's one of the fastest growing plants on the planet. You know, it has lots of fat in it, so we can make plastics out of it, and then that's completely biodegradable, right? You can make, not only is the tensile strength very close to steel, but it's also has fire properties.
Oh, wow.
So it's flame retardant, right? There's a lot of applications for this that goes beyond, just basically, you know, getting high.
Right.
I'd like to liken it to probably like the oil industry, and secondly, probably to something like the alcohol industry, you know, or opioid industry, right? But then opioid in a good way, because the addiction ratings and then the fatalities don't right now exist in research. You know, this is a safer drug than opioids.
Yeah, I had I used to be a cannabis reporter, and I had a defense attorney once tell me, I've never had someone come into my office because they smoked too much weed and then hit their wife. It's never happened. Well, at least to this defense attorney. He was like, the only thing I've ever had happen is somebody smoked too much and then they passed out on the couch. Like,
I talked to a lot of police officers, right? And they said, you know, they've seen a lot of angry drunks, but then, you know, they meet a guy who smokes some weed, and then most of the times when they go over there, they're invited in and say, hey, do you want a glass of water?
That's funny.
So do you think federally, kind of getting back to that, I'm so interested in the medicinal side of it, But how soon, and if they haven't already, would the mainstream pharmaceutical companies get involved? Because, you know, doctors could be looking at this as pain relief and other, you know, cures. Or how soon does this get those major players in pharmaceuticals involved, if it hasn't already?
It's naive to believe that they're not. Of course, already involved. We are actually working with doctors. We developed a doctor line for CBD that's distributed only through doctors for prescription usage, so the doctors can figure out with the patient what the dosage is. We give it to neurologists. We give it to physiatrists, which is pain management. You know, we give it to dermatologists. You know, we develop lines specifically for doctors because they want it.
That's interesting.
At least the CBD aspect, because it's easier to just, you know, resell at their office, help bolster their income, and not only bolster their income, help their patients. You know, a lot of the patients don't want to be on the opioids anymore just because of the bad image it's gotten, and rightly so.
There's 100%.
Look at the Johnson & Johnsons of the world, and you said, oh, you know, when are they going to get in the game? You know what? I'm absolutely positive that they are spending tons of cash to figure out what's the next best thing.
Yeah, I would imagine. I think I asked a very loaded question.
But I do want to follow up on your question, though, Chase, because, Kevin, you briefly mentioned his name, but one of your – you co-founded Grove Group with Tiki Barber. How much – I guess, how important is the medical cannabis component to you guys simply because of the NFL and CTE-related issues?
Well, we went over the more mainstream CBD factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
CBD is easier to distribute. The people don't have to, the doctors don't have to be necessarily card-carrying prescription cannabis doctors or even understand something as complex as basically prescribing, you know, like marijuana to a patient. So we've been working with doctors to help relieve pain. We developed a product brand line, PureX CBD. And basically it's formulated for people that have anxiety, that have, you know, muscle problems, inflammation problems, needing to sleep, and we're working with the doctors to create those formulations so that their patients have the best benefits available to them. That's easily done, and we're also helping the doctors because they get to earn some more money and the ability to basically give them a supplement that they can use that will better their life.
Are you working at all with the NFL in any way to try to see if the CBD products help players who may be suffering or more susceptible to developing CTE?
CTE, that was actually done by a couple of other NFLers.
Okay.
Tiki and I, you know, like we'll talk and then we'll distribute, say amongst friends and family. And, say, hey, you know, what do you think of this product? What do you think of that product? Put this on here. You know, we developed with a doctor, you know, see if this helps, see how that works. And we're getting just feedback in terms of how that specific physiology for that person reacts to the formulations that we're creating.
So for those people who want to get involved in this industry, what makes a cannabis business a worthwhile investment for you? What are the things that you're looking for?
To have a tremendous amount of money. You have to have influence with government, and you have to know what you're doing in terms of running a business, right? So If you can find that in a team and basically find people that have a good idea that aren't charging an arm and a leg for those valuations, then, you know, you can possibly find things. Like, if you look at the general stock market, they've been taking a beating. I think, you know, the top three in Canada has been down close to 65%. valuation since last year. The public market, the only reason I don't like the public market is because they need to produce numbers each quarter. And then we like to take our time and finding investments that we think make sense and then developing and working with those investments so that they develop to the potential that we want to see from them. So if you're investing by yourself, I would say, do a lot of due diligence. Find out if you're not qualified to rate a business or don't understand manufacturing or don't understand distribution, if you don't understand how to run a store, right, then don't buy, shares at a corporation that manufactures, I guess, a factory of vape lines or edibles or, a dispensary. Like, you have to understand the business and you have to understand, how much they can potentially make, because, projections are just projections. Everyone writes them, a lot of people fluff them up, and, it's all good and dandy until the rubber meets the pavement.
That sounds like some pretty sound advice.
Very sound advice. I've got a few friends that are involved in that in Florida, started the business purely because their mother died of cancer. And was in extraordinary pain, and they would go over and get the medicinal and from the other, and they looked at it, and this very, very savvy businessman, and he just started to do it, and just over a long period of time, didn't get too crazy, but got a lot of, investments through friends and family and those kinds of things. And now the state of Florida has kind of loosened its reins a bit, and they're purely in the medicinal side of things in those products. But he had literally a 10-year business plan and started this way before it was even legal. In this day and age now, he feels that he wouldn't be as successful now if he hadn't started when he did. Do you find that people now, you're in such a crowded marketplace that it really has to be product specific rather than just getting into the quote unquote marijuana business?
A question, because it's not an easy answer. The easy answer is, sure, if the state has been around for multiple years and it's gone wreck, then your opportunities are going to be limited unless you have a tremendous amount of money behind you to develop a true campaign to earn market share, right? If you're talking about a new state that just came online, then it still is Wild Wild West there, right? And then new states are coming online as we speak, and you're having opportunities there, right? Like New York, New Jersey, they're heavyweight states. They haven't gone recreational yet, and yet they still have a very strong black market presence that actually harms their medical applications, right?
Okay.
Because, if you talk to the doctors down in New York and New Jersey, the New York doctor is telling you, I'll prescribe something to my patient, but then he'll go to his corner drug dealer and he'll get it. It's not hard to find.
Which is dangerous.
You get the more, you have to understand that they're smoking flower. And then, once the more refined products come and then, the products become more mainstream, then, not everyone wants to smoke.
Right.
I don't like inhaling a joint. I just don't like the feeling of it. I would prefer another methodology in order to deliver that's a lot more controlled than like a brownie or a cookie.
Yeah. 100%.
So Kevin, just before we let you go, what are your predictions for the industry, and what are your goals, I guess, for Grove Group? Do you hope to continue doing exactly what you guys are doing, or do you have any long-term goals you could share with us?
What we see is Grove Group's big thing is we're gathering innovators, right? Like a lot of our guys are so obsessed with this, and we've taken people that are successful in their own industry and hasn't failed, and we asked them to switch industries and join us in cannabis. Like, I like to make that point out because, we have some talented individuals that dream about Canvas at night, and we come up with some great ideas and find out ways to help and develop products that are in our roster. So, you know, the distribution, the branding, just creating, I guess, more clarity in the madness, right? We think that there's so many inefficiencies in the market that we can fix. I would love to announce one of our new projects that's already almost ready for market, but I can't yet. That's a huge game changer. It's a disruptive technology.
We have. I thought we were going to get your big announcement.
Yeah. And then almost, though, because trust me, I want to say it so badly, but then it's just such a game changer that I can't, you know, we just have to hold on to it for a little bit longer. There is a lot of opportunities here, you know, there's B2B opportunities, developing the sales, developing all the different lines. You know, we're looking at the, you know, the applications for CBD, the hopefully THC in the near future. And we're working to find ways to basically build a better mousetrap. You know, everyone just doesn't stop and say, oh yeah, we're good. You know, we're locating inefficiencies, we're developing solutions. A lot of our guys, you know, wake up, it's like, hey, I had a dream about this. And then I think it might be a good solution. And then they write it down in their notebook and compare it to their meetings. And it's like, wow, that's fucking genius. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. We're a podcast.
We're a podcast. You're good.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
In fact, that just made the whole podcast. Yeah. So thanks. You can hear the passion now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is passion. You know, we're really passionate about it. And then we really work on it. And then I just love the participation. You know, even our shareholders, they come up with some amazing ideas as well. And then, like, you know, I'd love to give out some shout-outs, but then I'd be breaking some NDAs.
Are you using these products, by the way, when you're coming up with these grand ideas?
Yeah, all right. So I am a medical card user, and then I do smoke an occasional J, and do vape on occasion, right? I'm staying away from the edibles now. I do definitely use the CBD stuff. I love it. Some of the products we've come out are absolutely game changers. We have lower back problems, and you know, using some of our CBD stuff is awesome.
Okay, so you hit me at lower back problems. Yeah.
Taking medical.
Are we talking muscle lower back problems, or are we talking like spinal structure lower back problems?
I have both. So muscle and, you know, I'm probably going to have to go in for surgery eventually, but then they can't slow me down yet.
Do you have like stenosis or something like that?
No, it's just me being, I guess, a wannabe athlete. And,
yeah.
You know, doing, you know, living large, you know, I used to own a Ducati and race around, and then I love skiing. I love being active. And then I think all of that just caught up to me at 1 year, and then my doctor is like, oh yeah, you're missing a disc between here and here. I'm like, do I need it? It's like, yes, you will.
Yeah, I'm paying for all that now, just so you know. So I'm looking at, yeah, it's either surgery or just how do you learn to survive with it? And that's
CBD.
Oh, you know,
that's what I'm having to look at.
Yeah, like my sister is freaking awesome with that. You know, if you want to talk offline, I can give you her contact information. I'm sure she'll look at your chart. She'll be like, this is the right way to do it. She's so anti-surgery.
And so, I am too. I've heard horror stories, but at the same point, I'm at my age now, 48, but I'm just worried that I don't want to be slumped over and have a cane when I'm 58, you know, when I'm 65.
I totally, totally understand you. I'm right there with you. Cause, I can't ski anymore. I can't run anymore because of the back problems. I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to have to get the surgery so I can just stay healthy.
Exactly. And that's, I'm trying to avoid that. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. I've heard nightmare stories of people that have back surgery. And yet, you know, I just know that there's that looking that line, trying to find the right product for you can be really overwhelming. I looked at it when my mother passed away and I went through a bout of anxiety after she died. And I was like, this is crazy. And I tried CBD and it didn't work for me at all. But yet then somebody else gave me a little bit of a different brand of CBD, and it calmed me right down. So it was like, I thought I'd done all this great research and yet didn't work for me. So it's just, I think navigating that world is, you know, some CBDs are $49 a bottle, some are $350 a bottle. So is price always better? I mean, that's kind of where.
Price isn't always better because you don't know what's exactly in it.
No, but do you ever? I mean, it's hard to know, right?
Even when you read the ingredients, like I said, I'd rather see some news articles on that specific corporation that's mentioned in the news, right? And hopefully buy it from a major retailer because, you know what, they do some checks and make sure that they have insurance and everything like that for their products, right? So then you're getting real producers.
Gotcha.
I would say that, one, there's something called a diagnostic differential. So then what may be prescribed to you might not necessarily work because physiology. Like, I've seen people get loopy on a CBD tincture.
Really?
And the person's an absolute giant, you know, maybe like 6'5", 340 pounds, completely just a total rock. And then take like a couple of drops of CBD, which would do nothing for me. And I'm like 5'8", and like 165. And like, it would do absolutely nothing for me. The person there would be like, oh man, I got to sit down for a second.
Wow.
Like, whoa. You know, the physiology and how the chemical pathways work for each body is a little bit different. Gotcha. So then there is going to be a little bit of experimentation that goes on, which is why, you know, we like to team up with the doctors so that when they do give it to their patients, then, you know, they can instruct and find out, you know, which one works.
Right. And that's no different than pharmaceuticals. It's no different than, let's say, I never had the opportunity to take it because I didn't want to. But, you know, when they were looking at talking about whether it be depression medication or something like that, it's trial and error for them too, constantly, because everybody reacts differently to different products or different, again, physiology, right?
Yeah, there's a small percentage of the population that gets anxious because of it. Everyone else might get chilled out, and then, you know, anxiety is actually one of the top four things that, you know, cannabis is known to help for. And, you know, for a small percentage, it's the absolute opposite. They get anxious. Wow. You know, it's not for them. So, you know, each person has to do their own thing and see how well it works for them.
Well, I think that that's, I can hear the absolute passion that you have for what you're doing. And I can imagine that the sky's the limit for you and your organization. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today.
And like, we had like a cool little chat, so that, yeah, you know, it's a good time for me. I love doing things like this, and if you ever want to discuss again, hit me up.
And now a follow-up with myself, Phil, and Katie. So Kevin Shin, that was very fun. I enjoyed the heck of it. I didn't know going in quite where we were going to go with that, and he was very engaging, incredibly smart. I mean, you could hear that from all the way across the country via the phone line, although the connection was a little funky here and there, but he's got something going.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know how this interview was going to go either, because it's, like I mentioned, I was a cannabis reporter, and so sometimes you get people that are very willing to share their experience using a product or something, or they'll be more open about the challenges or something. And he was great because he was willing to share that he uses it personally, you know.
From time to time.
From time to time.
No gummies.
No.
Stopped with the gummies.
But I think it's cool too how when you're talking about an investment, like, there's all different types of investments you can do. It's cool when there's kind of a social justice aspect to it. And we briefly mentioned this during the interview, but I actually have a number now. So back around 2012, 2013, before there was any sort of recreational legalization within the United States, there were about 2,000 arrests per day for, like,
possession, use.
Yes. just for resale. Marijuana. Yeah. I also want to circle back to that too. The reason I was using the term cannabis instead of marijuana, sometimes marijuana is only referring to the part of the plant that's got that psychoactive component.
The TSH.
THC.
THC.
Tetrahydrocannabinol.
Can you tell how much I use it? Maybe I should.
Yeah. but there's also back in like the 1930s when Reefer Madness and Prohibition started regarding this plant, it was kind of a racist term, a slur. So that's another reason why you'll see a
cannabis
lot of...
Cannabis was.
No, marijuana was a...
That's... Really?
Yeah.
Why would that be a racist term?
So back in like 1937-ish,
okay,
that's when you started to see jazz started coming out.
Yeah.
You saw a lot of people from Mexico started coming up in the southeast region, like Louisiana.
So what you're saying is culturally, marijuana was... Kind of attached to the African American scene.
Not even just the African Americans. It was also attached to the Chinese, and it was attached to people that practiced voodoo
medicinals,
magic.
Okay, so medicines, because the Chinese have used it for generations. I mean, forever.
Right, right. I mean, even in the U.S. too, there was a federal medical marijuana program. I looked
back
up,
in the 30s.
No, so it was called the Compassionate Use Investigational New Drug Program. And this is what happened. There was this guy named Robert Randall, and he was arrested in 1976 for growing cannabis on his deck. So he came out and said, the reason I'm growing this plant is because I have really a severe form of glaucoma, and this is the only thing that's helping me keep my vision. So he went to court over it. May 10th, 1978, the U.S. government basically opened up this federal medical marijuana program.
And back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. So 15 people ended up being admitted. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people applied. 15? Mm-hmm. And then they closed the program.
Small program.
They closed the program in 1992.
More people use that in Studio 57. Wait.
Studio 54.
Studio 54. Man.
Yeah. So I actually, back when I was a cannabis reporter, I interviewed some of the surviving folks who were part of that federal medical marijuana program. So to this day, I don't know if anyone is still alive in 2020, but back in 2012, when I was talking to some of these people, they get about 300 joints a month from the U.S. federal government.
No way.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
In joints, like rolled
joints. However, they told me that the joints are some of the poorest quality, and a lot of the joints are filled with the seeds and the sticks, which you're not supposed to smoke that part of the plant. You're supposed to smoke the bud.
So who do they get it from?
So there's a federal researcher from the University of Mississippi, and he's like,
he rolls them and sends them to these people?
I think they have a machine, but another problem is that they would freeze dry the bud, which ruins the THC. Apparently you have to use, THC is only active for about 3 years or something. So back...
As all plants die.
Right. Yeah. So when I was talking to these people back in 2012, they were saying they were getting joints that said on the label it was made in like 1996.
Oh, good golly.
Yeah. So a lot of them went to the black market because what they were getting wasn't good enough.
Right.
But some of these stories were things like people weren't able to keep medicines down for various like chemotherapy and everything. So a lot of these people hadn't eaten in weeks. And there was one man in particular, he hadn't eaten in weeks. He was basically told by the doctors, you're going to die in this hospital. And at one point a nurse was like, okay,
they were feeding him intravenously if he's in there.
Correct. So he hadn't eaten anything like on his own. And so a nurse was like, hey, we have a patient down here who has some marijuana cigarettes. Would you like to try one of these instead of smoking your tobacco cigarette? He agreed. He was like, well, I'm dying anyway. Later that day, he ordered food. He was hungry for the first time in weeks. He was released from the hospital. I interviewed him in 2012.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah. So... there's money to be made here.
And I think that's the part of this that this specific episode is so interesting to me because, you know, obviously we're a financial show, right? Mm-hmm. And we talk about the opportunities for finances and helping yourself. And that's exactly what Kevin was talking about is being a, almost like a steward, you know, making sure that there's quality products, but he wasn't sitting back saying, I'm doing this for the quality of, you know, society. They're right. making a buck and they're making a legitimate business out of this, which is, hey, when creating a business and making money became a crime and socially unacceptable, I don't know, but good for him. As long as those products that they're creating are serious quality, because people will pay for quality products. And it's those black market and those CBD that we talked about in 7-Elevens and those kinds of things. Not saying that 7-Eleven has bad products, but those aren't the products that we're talking about typically for healing people, right?
Well, there's a difference.
There is a big difference.
Well, it's a big industry. And if you think about big industries, there's not that many of them where you can say, I got in pretty close to the ground floor. And it's a newer industry. You can't just jump into most industries and say that you were on the front end, like, you know, way early in the process. And this is one of those opportunities where if you were in the industry right now, you're kind of in at the ground floor.
You're in at the ground floor, and he's going to be in the ground floor a few more times.
Right.
You know, maybe more than a few.
And you might lose some. Well, and he was well aware of that. But
the landscape's going to change. Laws will change. Yeah. The way they create the plant might change. There's going to be all different kinds of things. And then, as he mentioned, more states come on board, or if they make it federally, you know, the landscape of the way they sell it, the way they create it, the way they make it, the way we invest in it, all might, it's going to change. It's going to, it's going to be an evolving thing. And I think that's why Kevin was so fascinating to me in the fact that he and his team are aware of this and they are ready for every change. In fact, not being ahead of the game and creating and helping create the change or how it's evolving. I think for us, because we can sit here and talk about socially, whether we think that it should be legal and because that's not really the discussion anymore, right? That's
no, but there's a financial component to that.
A huge financial component to it, because we're talking about, as you mentioned before, as a, it was all illegal. So any marijuana that was being smoked or being sold, was illegal inside the borders of the United States, Mexico and Canada for the longest time as well. Now Canada is a federally across the nation selling it and creating it and doing all that. I don't think the U.S. is going to be far behind federally because of all the positive things that can come of it.
Well, I think the banking aspect is going to play a huge role too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Here in California, even though we have recreational, it's legal, you still have to pay in cash for any sort of product that you may purchase at a legal dispensary. There are some dispensaries now that do have lines of credit that they offer. But I mean, that's a question in itself too. This is not, I mean, if you buy 10 joints on a credit card and you can't pay it back, it's not like somebody can take those joints back if you smoke them.
Now, and the reason the banks do that is because most of the large banks are federal, right? And,
correct.
And international. So they are going to try to, it's very difficult to follow state regulations for each state.
Well, any federally insured bank will not even
touch it,
allow a savings account because you're right. It could be taken in a forfeiture like that.
So if it was a local, only a state-run, let's just say a credit.
Then the NCU.
Yes, the NCUA, I see what you're saying. Yeah. The federal insurance is not going to insure
gonna cover it. Also,
yeah.
But even just from like bringing it back to more, I guess, consumer day-to-day life, because after Kevin said you need $500,000 to invest in his company, like I am out. I don't have that kind of money.
Right.
But it is interesting because these people are pushing for legalization. It's an interesting kind of safety question too, going back to the banking. He mentioned some of the money that people have stored has been eaten by rats.
Yeah.
I've also heard from people that at the end of the day, because all of their employees are paid in cash, all of their money has to go somewhere safe. They'll have about 5 cars when they're closing up a shop at the end of the day. The money goes in one, and all the cars go different ways to try to confuse, you know.
If anybody's watching them.
Correct.
Right. That makes... Yeah. Oh, my God. Can you imagine living like that every single day?
Well, no. That makes a perfectly, in California, legal business operate a lot like a black market business.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though it's legal, they're operating like they are run by the mafia, right? Now, I know nothing about the mafia but what I see in movies, but as I would imagine, they're not that they're laundering the money, they just have nowhere to put it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then that goes into why the federal government wouldn't do it is because now you're paying all these people in cash. How do they possibly pay the taxes that are due on that?
You're not paying taxes.
You're not.
Most of the time, you're not paying tax. I mean, for us in California, if you go to a medicinal dispensary, you're paying less of a tax than you would if you went to a recreational dispensary.
But the state of California is making getting taxes on that, correct?
But right. That was a state decision.
So where are they putting their money?
So it's all the states are different. California, I believe a lot of our tax dollars on marijuana, cannabis-related products goes toward public schools and education.
But where do they put that?
Oh, good question.
If they're not putting it in a bank, where does that money go? Where does the state of California keep it?
We're going to have to get the Cannabis Task Force on the show.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, the state of California is no different than you and me individually, right? In theory.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
How does a business pay it?
They have to use
it?
Banks.
Right.
They're getting that money, and it has to sit somewhere to be paid out to go to schools or wherever they say it's going to go. Is it going to the same place that they make money, you know, where we buy lottery tickets? Where does this all go? It's got to sit somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm. Investigative reporting.
I know.
You got Katie's attention now.
Because I think it's such an interesting thing. I had a woman talk to me back in the day, and she was saying, just being a female, it's scary if you're buying cannabis on the black market, because here you are, you can't really tell the cops where you're going. Now you're dealing with 100% cash. What happens if it doesn't go well?
Yeah,
that's true.
You don't really have a lot of options. So legalization was kind of also seen as a safety thing for some minority groups too. And I think like a financial component in there too, like it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the minority groups that were first kind of punished for their participation in the cannabis market, but now it's going a whole different way.
So I think we're obviously finding out that cannabis can help society in so many ways.
Do you think the tax
dollars...
It
helps your dog. I mean...
Oh, yeah,
you know,
it does.
It makes him realize that he wants to keep you home every day. I don't know if that's the cannabis.
It might be. So, yeah, truth.
CBD, right?
Yeah. So my dog, he's 6 months old, and he started losing a lot of his teeth, and he was bleeding a lot when he was losing his teeth. And there was one day he lost 3 teeth, and I had been giving him toys, and I even gave him a T-shirt of mine to just bite on to try just to stop the bleeding. Nothing was working. I'm a nervous mom, so I didn't know what to do. I called the vet, and she suggested I give him a CBD ice cube. So I went to the store, and they have CBD infused water here.
Like PetSmart or Petco?
So I went to a dispensary.
Okay.
Because I've had experience talking to people like Kevin before,
sure.
I really wanted the quality CBD.
1,000%.
My dog eats better than I do. Like, let's just be real. He has better things. Like, his world, everything's like organic and clean and fresh. But I got him ice cubes, but then I saw that they had this little, I thought it was the travel size CBD for pets, like kind of a tincture. I've seen little kids use it, and they stopped having seizures, or their seizures were less
reduced, intense.
Mm-hmm. So I was very much so willing to try it for him. I also had learned that the CBD tincture helps pets with separation anxiety issues, which the separation anxiety starts to show around 6 months too.
Mm-hmm.
So turns out that was $80. It wasn't the travel size. I was too embarrassed to say I didn't know how much it cost. So I completed my transaction. But when I gave it to
him, in the grand scheme of things, $80 is not very much.
No, I mean, that's the thing.
Think about
Like,
going to the vet and getting whatever medications you were going to have to get for the dog to do that kind of thing.
right. Well, and if he had, like, if he coughed once, didn't even have kennel cough, but just coughed once, I probably would already be pleading with God, like, okay, $80 is nothing. Like, I'll pay you $160. Just please, like, let him be
It's a good thing
okay.
you had a dog first before you had
I
children.
Is that practice?
It's gonna be worse. I was telling Felipe, I just
You'll
bought
be
Jagger
fine.
a seatbelt. It's been like, well, it's like a seatbelt harness, and it's the only one that's been, it's one of three that's been crash tested and everything.
For a
Like,
dog.
for a dog, like my, like, I'm not kidding. My dog literally gets like crumb de la crumb over here.
I put the seatbelt on my dog once just because I'm sick of that ding, ding, ding,
Oh,
ding.
yeah.
Seatbelt. He doesn't like that very much. He just got out of it. So, but I keep it locked so it won't
Oh, yeah. So,
warn me that there's, because he's heavy enough to put off the
the
sensor.
sensor,
This one is gonna, he has like a little harness, and then there's a kind of like a car
Can
seat.
you please take a picture? Can you please? In fact, will you take a picture and post it on our site? So when people listen to this, they can see what you're
Of
talking
course.
about.
I should also post a picture. We're trying to teach Jagger how to catch a frisbee. He hasn't quite figured it out. So his face is just kind of through the hole a little bit. I'm trying to bring up a picture so I can show Chase. But yeah, his face just kind of sticks right through, and that's my dog.
See, there was a thing on Twitter, and it was like, explain your podcast co-hosts in one tweet or using one GIF. And I tweeted a picture of some people sitting, two people sitting in a tub full of puppies. And I was like, oh, there's Chase and Katie.
That is funny.
But yeah, here's Jagger trying to carry a frisbee.
Oh my goodness, that's funny.
Yeah, so his head is just through the hole in the middle, and yeah.
My dog is a golden retriever. He's a golden doodle. And golden retriever, God bless him. He's in remission right now. He's going through lymphoma, and his hair is starting to fall out. So he's getting, you know, he had this beautiful thick coat that we kept trimmed because he looked more golden than poodle, but it's really thinning out. And so even though he's healthy right now, he looks more sickly than he ever has. Mostly just because he, with a poodle, you've got real hair versus fur, right? Which fur,
I didn't
that
know that.
sheds all the time, where the doodles have hair that they don't shed. That's why they don't have dander. That's, you know, or their dander is not quite as, it doesn't bother people as much because it doesn't go anywhere. It's
So it's
just
more
on the dog,
hypoallergenic.
hypoallergenic, right? But he, for the first time we've owned the dog, the kids are going, oh my gosh,
What's
Jackson's
this?
shedding on me. And it's because of the chemo, and they said that would happen. But you talked about Richard. That dog will run after a ball and pick it up on the ground only when it stops. He will not a frisbee. He will not try to catch it. In fact, it just donks him on the face, or he gets out of the way, and then he won't return it. He won't retrieve it. Like, or he'll retrieve it, but he won't return it.
Yeah.
And he'll walk it up right to you, and you try to grab it, and then
And
it's like keep away. Yeah. Dumbest retriever I've ever met. And I blame the poodle part of him. For those
Well,
of you with poodles, and I
although
know they're very
poodles are,
smart,
yeah, I was gonna
they are very
say.
smart, but they are
They're
very
not
conniving.
retrievers.
Yes. They're not retrievers. It's exactly, and he won't swim. Have you ever met
What?
a golden retriever that won't swim? Scared to
No.
death of water. Yeah.
Really?
Hates it. absolutely hates it. Back to CBD
Yes,
and
back though.
cannabis. Sorry. Sorry
But I
for
mean that's a
going
great
off kilter
but
here.
that's a great point though. Like this industry, think of the money that you could make just from the pet angle alone.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, people spend money on their pets.
Well,
It's a
he
big
talked about that
industry.
too.
Yeah.
Kevin talked about the different quality of products that can come from this. I have friends of ours that used to be my neighbors, but still live in our neighborhood, and their poor little daughter has had epileptic seizures for since she was 9 months old, 10 months old
Oh,
in
that's
there, and
heartbreaking.
they're terrible. I mean, some of these things would last 15 minutes. I mean, really long. And they have done everything, and they have done all kinds of studies, and they've gone to the best hospitals up in UCLA and up in Children's and Cedars-Sinai, I mean, all these places. And they've come a long way. But the one thing that helped her more than anything, and that was before it was legalized in different states, mm-hmm. they found that the doctors with these seizures were like started on cannabis without the THC.
Yes.
But it helped a lot. Still has the seizures, but not to near the severity that she was. You know, obviously, you know, seizures are, and I'm no expert on any of that at all, but all I know is as a parent and as a friend of parents who have to deal with and have to have a child that is, could be struck with these seizures at any time. I know that helped them. And not only that, the stress levels that they were going through that, and, you know, they can use to help ease their nerves and ease them along. I mean, how can people ever be against this? And how can we not want to use this for medicinal purposes or recreation? I mean, I drink a beer. I drink 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 in a given weekend, and society's fine with that, but we're not okay with smoking a plant. It doesn't make sense to me at all. And I was a kid that grew up I never smoked a joint in my life. To this day, I smoked one since it's been legal, right? And I joke with my son because he's, you know, he doesn't like to follow rules quite as much. I was the super rule follower, right? And so if it was illegal, I didn't do it. Although I did probably have a beer or two before I was 21. But, you know, so I guess it wasn't straight across the board. But when it came to something like that, I just didn't want to get in trouble. The point that I'm trying to make is that we are so far along in this, and their studies have shown so much that how is this not from at the federal level happening? I mean, for a government that loves, that created the CPF, I always screw it up.
Oh, the CFPB?
CFPB. Thank you. Every
Consumer
time.
Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Yeah, and I work with them all the time, and they're great. The problem is we want to regulate everything. How are we not getting on top of this right now and finding out how can this both work economically and then get this to the masses for all different types of usage and have our banks figure out how to do this?
Because people are still making money off of the prohibition. I think that would be the greatest. But going back to what...
But does the government care about black market and people selling this... Maybe they do.
I think it would be interesting to see what happens to.
Are we worried about the
black market
drug trade coming out of Mexico?
I think it'd be interesting to see.
And I'm talking about cannabis.
Experiment.
I'm not talking about the other drugs that come up that way.
Well, I think it'd be interesting to see if it were legalized on a national level, what that would do to the black market of it.
Well, it has been legalized in Uruguay and Canada already.
That's true.
And it's legal in some European nations.
So, partially. I looked into this just so I could make sure I was accurate.
Don't tell me it's not legal in the Netherlands. Everything's legal in the Netherlands.
It's not. It is technically not legal in Amsterdam.
You can do mushrooms.
So, cannabis is legal in the specific pot shops in the Netherlands.
So
that's the catch.
So, in the Netherlands, and I think we should clarify this, right? There are specific areas of the country that where these uses are okay.
Yes, yeah, so Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam, right?
You would still have to go into the pot shop. Now, because there are...
You can't do it on the street.
Technically, no. But this is where, again, Spain is another example. It's technically not legal in Spain, but there are clubs where you can go. Denmark is similar. There are shops you can go. Colombia has... some sort of medical, and Chile has some medical. But again, it's kind of like when marijuana was medically legalized in California, if you smelled it, like a cop wasn't necessarily going to say, like, show me your medical ID card.
If you've ever been to a concert since.
Right. Yeah.
Speaking from my experience, my
and
first
this
concert
is any
was,
genre.
Was
the Oingo used to be just Boingo. The reggae concerts, but it's really any genre.
Any genre.
Yeah.
My first one was Oingo Boingo when I was in eighth grade. I'm telling you, it is a strong smell, and I didn't see any cops around there looking for people. So, I mean, even though, you know,
Speaking of the odor,
it's interesting.
I interviewed the odor.
I love the smell.
Really?
Okay.
I love it. I do.
So this guy that I interviewed, he works for...
I'm not a super taster, though.
He works for NORML. It's the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, N-O-R-M-L, NORML. And he was telling me that he's been smoking weed for so long that when he smells a skunk, like his mouth starts to salivate because there's a similar skunky smell.
It's similar, yeah.
So there is.
But his mouth will literally salivate.
That's funny.
The smell of a skunk. It just cracked me up. Every time I smell a skunk now, I'm like, oh, I wonder.
There is a difference. One is much stronger than the other, but yeah, there is. They're mm-hmm. very similar.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you're
yet I hate the smell of skunks, so go figure.
You walk through like a parking lot and my kid was like, oh, there's a skunk nearby. No, buddy, that was something else. I didn't explain to him. I was like, no, I don't think that must have been something else.
Do you notice the big old smile that comes across her face, though? You ever notice that when you smell it?
You can't be mad.
You can't. I mean, how can something that makes you so happy? I mean, think about this. I mean, you ever had an officer who is going to come into your house because if somebody's been called, and if somebody's drunk, right? Chances are the drunk is going to get disorderly mm-hmm. and get angry and fight the cop. The cops will always say, I never met anybody that wanted to beat us up. They invite us in for food.
Yeah. They're happy. Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like,
hey, come on in.
I know that there are some people that do have a bad reaction
sure.
with
like
it.
Anything else.
Right. But that's the point. Like anything else.
Right.
But I want to circle back to what you were saying, though, about your friend who has a child who benefits from CBD?
CBD.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I can't say whether it's from the hemp plant or the cannabis. I believe it is from the cannabis plant that they're using the CBD from, because they're related, but they're not the same thing.
Yeah. So hemp is usually more of the stock. The bud that you actually smoke is the flower. So okay. It's the female part of the plant. Hemp, I think, is the more the male part of the plant.
Gotcha.
CBD, technically, to be effective, has a little bit of THC in it.
But so minute.
Yeah, so for pediatric patients, they will try to lessen that THC. There are some pediatric patients who do need a higher dosage of THC. So, I mean, that's interesting in itself. But what I wanted to bring up is the green rush and the number of people who had to move out of their home state to a different state just to help their kid get access.
I have seen some news stories about it on TV when it first happened, like Colorado and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. A lot of times attention is paid to the bigger coastal states, but this is where a lot of legalization happened first. So I think it would be interesting to see economically if the country were to legalize nationwide, how demographics would maybe change and state populations would maybe change.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a sociology. That'd be interesting.
But yeah. I mean, I do wonder how it affected the pricing of housing, because Colorado being one of the first to legalize, that's where everyone was going.
Absolutely.
You know?
I did think he mentioned, and you know, with everything else, I mean, this is beer, everything else, trying to find a way to enforce it as far as public safety, mm-hmm. which is very important, you know, and he mentioned that they're trying to be responsible about everything. It's the public safety aspect of it, the driving, and how that takes into place with what are the financial penalties for an infraction? What are the insurance increases for infractions, much like, you know, you're trying the standards for, is it the same standards as alcohol? Is it, you know,
I don't think so. I think that's all going to have to be studied.
Right.
It's affecting, you know, I guess I would think that marijuana is not going to get into your blood system. It is in your blood system, but is it the same weightedness as alcohol?
Right.
It's more.
It's stronger.
So, well, yes and no. So what happens is if you were to smoke a joint and you had never smoked a joint, you may have traces of cannabis in your system 30 days later. Oh, wow. If you are a frequent regular user, it may take months and months and months for any trace to be fully washed out from your body.
I am aware of this for the mere fact that a lot of companies do test for it.
Yeah.
And many, many people have lost their jobs.
Yeah, I was in a
banana. And or didn't get hired because of that very thing. And they're like, but I haven't done that in weeks. And it's still there. So.
Yeah. So the employment factor too, because even though it's legal in California, if you work for a national company, that can be a reason that affects your employment.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're working in a business where you drive or operate machinery or anything like that.
Yeah. People with a commercial driver's license, far more affected too.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure. And can you imagine those people that have commercial licenses and their backs are bad because they sit and drive all the time and they could use it because they're, you know,
right. But I mean, back pain? Even the creation then of
CBD
proper equipment to properly test whether or not someone's high. I mean, that's going to be,
it's not like a breathalyzer.
No. Do you know what they had in Colorado? They have these like nose breathalyzers where they can like smell, like cops, like put it almost like a nose binoculars and like smell the intensity, see where it's coming from.
That's interesting.
There are so many other episodes that we are getting out of this roundtable. People that we need to interview and find out how this is economically going to hit us in so many different ways. So stay tuned for that, because we will get that. What's up?
Next week, we're having a guest who's going to help us try to talk about the financial challenges specific to the LGBTQ.
Ah.
And then we have another episode coming up on addiction and finance.
Addiction and finance. That's awesome. Look forward to that. Until next time.